Yo, what up? It's your boy with DJ Stone, aka O-Doctor. Welcome to Doc Tales. Woo! As usual, I don't know what number it is. You don't know what number it is. Actually, you do, because if you're watching this, you'll see it and then you'll figure it out. Not a huge deal. It's just a thing that I don't do. If you have any money, throw it to me at IQMZ. My Patreon is patreon.com/IQMZ. And give me a dollar. Give me $3. Give me $8,000. Whatever you got to give, I'm willing to take it, and I'll do more shows for you. I might even do a little dance. If you're broke, which I know a lot of people are, subscribe on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, follow me. Go somewhere, hit a sub button. Just iTunes, RSS, Android. Get me in your life so at least I'm here for you. You know what I mean? Because I know everybody ain't got money. But if you do got the money, throw the money. If you don't got the money, hit the button. It don't cost you nothing. I'd appreciate it. This show is a show where I interview people. This person is what I like to call... he's like a ghost friend because he doesn't really know what I do. I know what he does, but I don't know nothing about him because we're like internet friends. So that way, I don't know anything. He doesn't know anything. It's like an even playing field. But today is interrogation day. Lord help me. Say what's up to the people, Padre.
Hey, now, here's what I know about you. I know that every once in a while you jump on the Twit TV network and you burn the place down, and I love that.
Yes, we were just on Twit together. You did an amazing job hosting. The whole internet said so. Everybody was pleased and happy with the job that you did on Twit, so that was super exciting. I had fun. You had fun. It was great.
Well, I mean, that's what it's supposed to be, right? It's part education, part entertainment, and 100% O-Doctor.
Well, you know, the funny thing is like the one core thing that I always find is that since I'm not a general tech journalist, I'm not bound by the outlandish things that I say that some people are thinking. Not all people, right. But some people. And that is the thing. Like you have to be respectful to certain things, but sometimes things are just crazy and somebody's got to say it. So I at least get the freedom to say that for right now until I get in trouble. But neither here nor there. It's not about me. It's about you. How you doing today?
I am good, although I'm in San Francisco right now, and I'm my studio here is on the side of our building that's, for some reason, and somehow, even though it should be impossible, is always facing the sun. So I've got two air conditioners on full blast just to keep it below 90.
So my problem is that I have I'm configured in a warp hole where the air conditioner blows out onto the microphone. So I have to turn the air off while I'm doing shows. So on days like today where I'm in a 90 degree day, I'm in here cooking and it irks the mess out of me because I've tried to turn the microphone down, but it picks up everything. And I, for the love of you guys and listening, I don't want that buzzing in your ear because I know I can't stand it when I hear things like that. So I am on board with the heat, but just not the AC today. So let me ask you a question. Start off the bat. Where were you born?
Oh, I'm a Bay Area boy, pure and simple. What? I was born in... Oh, yeah. Born in Fremont, not too far away from where I am right now. Didn't spend a whole lot of time there. I moved around a whole heck of a lot. But, yeah, you know, I'm a Cali boy.
What prompted all this moving?
Oh, it's the way it worked. You know, we didn't have a lot of money. I came from an immigrant family, so we kind of went where we could to do what we could. And Fremont is actually where we kind of semi-settled when I was a kid. Okay. And, yeah.
So... By moving a lot when you were younger, were you moving around in the region? Is that what was going on?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, because we knew we wanted to be here. And you got to remember, this was back in the 70s before Silicon Valley became an impossible place to live, before, you know, you needed $1 million to buy yourself a closet.
Yeah.
And also my father and I, we both had the technology bug. And I would go dumpster diving. That's how I started my love for technology. I would go through all these companies, Xerox over in Palo Alto, and just find stuff, figure out what it did, figure out how it did it, take it apart, put it back together in a different configuration. And that's how I started my geek persona.
What was your favorite subject in school? Elementary.
Oh, it had to be science. I mean, yeah, absolutely. So I am horrible with grammar, with literature. I mean, I do it. I know how to do it. I know how to write. I can do all that, but that's sort of a chore. You put science in front of me and I will take to it like a duck to water. It's natural.
Did you play any sports?
I did. Played basketball, played baseball. Was really, really bad at both, but I got so many participation trophies, you'd be proud.
That's another rant for another day of me participation trophies. So Did you play any of those sports in high school, or was that just like when you were younger,
It's when I was younger. I did basketball very briefly when I was in high school, but then my mother wasn't big on me doing sports. What was her word? She goes, you know, Robert, you can be anything you want, but if you want to be a basketball star, you're going to be wanting that for the rest of your life. And it was her nice way of saying, yeah, no, son, you don't got that. You don't have it. So she got me into speech and debate.
I like mom. Mom's keeping it real. Like, you know, and that's the thing. I tell my daughter all the time, she plays every sport. She's not amazing at any of them. She does well at different moments and different times. But I tell her, like, look, put in the effort, have fun, and I don't need you to be Jordan. You know, there's some parents out there that are like, you know, oh, I'm like, your kid sucks. Just relax. You know, it's not that serious. But I tell her all the time, like, look, I don't need you to be the best player, but I need effort. Like, if you're going to be out here, and especially at this age, you spend money. I'm like, I can't be out here wasting my money. You're not putting in effort. You got to want to do it. You don't want to do it, let me know, because we can't just be paying for you to be out here lollygagging and looking at the stars and kicking dirt. So I'm lucky that she likes sports. I like your mom. Your mom's out there like, look, this ain't what you want to do. How'd you do in debate? How's debate treating you?
Debate is one of those things where I didn't want to do it. I'm actually scared to death of public speaking most of the time, which is why she wanted me to do it. I know, weird, right? So I started doing it and ended up being a state and national champion.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just one of those things.
We had an interview right now. Thanks for having us. We got a state champion on deck. You know what I mean? He's out here killing the streets in debate. But that's impressive. That's great. My biggest accomplishment is I won a spelling bee in the third grade, and I can't spell for anything now. So, I mean, that's the only championship that I got on my own
level. Have you seen the spelling bee? I couldn't spell the first round of words that those kids get.
And I guess there's a progression of, oh, they've used every word, they've said every word, but these words are insane for these children. And you should give everybody a $5,000 check just for the fact that they've got to study these words. Like, where are these words at in a dictionary? I've never seen half of these words in my life, ever, anywhere. And they're just pulling them out year after year, just spitting out these crazy words now. So you are right. Spelling bee is outlet. That's a sport. That's a sport. That's a contact sport. Spelling bee is nowadays. So the first question on real things: how'd you get into the whole "I love the Lord" thing? What happened? You went from the debate champ, semi basketball, loving science, dumpster diving for boards, to surfing with the Lord. Tell me what happened. Tell me the story of the day when you realized that you knew that the Lord is your shepherd, you shall not want.
Yeah, that was it's a little bit weird because I was never supposed to be the religious one. My brother Ryan, my younger brother, he was the religious one, and everyone figured he would be the priest in the family and he'd make mom happy, and then the whole family gets golden passports to heaven or whatever it is that they think. And I was the business guy, and that's what I did. I started my own business when I was, what, 8? Developed it when I was 12, sold it to Sun Microsystems. That was like my thing. I loved building things. I loved making things, and I loved business. But there came that time when I started realizing, you know, like 18 years old, I don't want to do this the rest of my life. You know, this is nice. Having money is nice, because I didn't come from money. And so the fact that my family had money now, that opened so many worlds. And you realize, wow, we were poor. That realization, when you can look back and go, dang, we didn't have anything. That was crazy. I was in a university at Santa Clara studying engineering, and I was just wondering what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I mean, I don't want to be a computer programmer. I like computer programming. I don't want to get paid for it. I don't want to start another business. You know, I've got money, so my parents, my family's taken care of. What do I want? And then I remembered there was a time I was in high school. I went to Bellarmine in San Jose, which was a Jesuit school. I had no idea who the Jesuits were, by the way, when I went there. It was just another high school that was way far away from my house. And one of the older priests, it was after speech and debate. I was there at like 7 o'clock at night waiting for a ride. And he comes out and he starts small talk. And the only thing I remember about this guy was I was scared to death of him. I had him for freshman English. And he was one of these old school teachers who he came in dead silent, wrote his name on the board, wrote the subject, walked to the back of the classroom, told everyone eyes forward, and started teaching. And it was like one of those like old school.
Yeah.
Oh, heck yeah. And then you know, he's looking at me and he's like, so why do you think you're alive? And it was, I was one of these, okay, what's the right answer? Please, I hope I have the right answer. Otherwise, he's going to give me detention or something. I said, I have no idea, Father. And he said, well, because God thought you might like it. And it was weird because years later, that kind of stuck with me. And I said, you know what? I'm going to check out what these Jesuits are. Because Santa Clara was also a Jesuit school. I was like, I don't know who they are. I went to one of their schools for 4 years, didn't learn a damn thing. And so I started checking out the community. And what I found, and this ties into my love of science, was the Jesuits are unique in the Catholic Church in that they don't try to take you and then make you what they need. So, oh, we need a parish priest. You're going to be a holy parish priest. Or we need a missionary. We're going to give you all the missionary skills and send you out. The whole thing about being a Jesuit in their mantra is we will take you and everything you are, everything you know, all your skills, and we will use you for a greater mission, for something that's bigger than you. And that included my love of science. That included my love of technology. And when I heard that, I'm like, yes, that please. I want to be part of something bigger. And if you're telling me that I can combine this sort of nascent faith, this love of God, and my love of technology, my love of science, my love of business, and you will use it for something greater, I'm sold. And that was, you know, that was when I was 20.
Okay, so I never knew. I've heard of Jesuits. I never met anyone or knew to even ask what it was. So I didn't know anything about that. I know about basically all the faiths and all the classes of faith, from Muslim to Jewish. Like I go to Passover every year with my Jewish family. Like because my thing is I'm not. I was raised in a Baptist household, and I read the Bible a million times. But I just got to the point where I'm like, really, like, these are just stories to keep people in line. Let me go check out what the other religions are. And then not for nothing, most of them are based on the general same core of things. So I was, but I never knew what a Jesuit was, and I never got to ask anybody. So that's interesting that that's their mantra or take on things. So how are you used in that? In that retrospect, so what happened, and what were you giving back to the Jesuit community?
Right, right. And so, and first of all, I got to say that idea of kind of looking at religion and saying, I see what this is. This is a way to control the people. Totally with you. I went absolutely through that. In fact, I still have that. You know, there are some people, some holy men and women who will say, I've never had a doubt, always believed in God, always have my faith. I'm not one of those people. I have doubts all the time. The only difference between me and those people is when I have doubts, I'm like, okay, let's think this through. You know, what is it that I want? That's big for me. So, and that's very Jesuit.
So not that we still got to get back to what you did for the Jesuits.
Yeah.
But in general, like, I believe in something, even when, like, you think of, like, you know, the Big Bang and then all the chemistry and all that kind of stuff, cool story. All I know is now with science, we create things all the time. We manipulate things all the time. We grow. We mash up. We stylize. We're in the genetic code. We can see it. We can manipulate it. So why isn't it that Alfred wanted to make an ant farm, and we in this galaxy, this universe, the vastness of it, it's just somebody's huge ant farm, and that person is God to us. It's just like when an animal looks at you, like, you're God to that animal. You feed them, you clothe them, you take care of them. They know nothing but you. You grace them with a new blanket once a year on Christmas and a cookie bone, and they're like, thank you so, like, so I know that there's something, and, you know, I feel something spiritually, and off air I'll tell you another story about something, but I I'm fully with you on that, and that's when people are like, oh, science. I'm like, but it's got to, I mean, we're doing some crazy stuff as humans now. So what is there to say that God or the being, whoever, didn't do it to give us everything that there is, especially with there's so much symmetry in things. When you see the brain synapses in the galaxy, and again, I'm not trying to trick myself into thinking there's a God, but I know something crazy is going on. That's all I know. I know something's out there bigger than us. So again, I cut you off again. Continue about what you did for the Jesuits.
Right, right. So you know, I went through the standard Jesuit formation. I've been a Jesuit for, 23, almost 24 years now. I've been a priest for 10 years of that. And over the course of my what we call formation, it's you go through different stages. So first of all, you have to study philosophy and theology. They do a trial period called regency, where we'll send you out to one of our institutions, typically a school, a high school or a university, and you'll teach. And they'll see if you've got skills for teaching. Now, that stuff's the normal stuff. The stuff that I've done that's a little abnormal that really involves my love for science is I've been in charge of things like the communication setup for the national organization in Washington, D.C. I was there for 4 years. I've done things like gone on mission to Bolivia and Vietnam. I've set up secure telecommunication systems so that we can talk to one another without having to worry about government eavesdropping. You know, I've bounced stuff off of satellites. That's where, you know, a lot of my networking knowledge came into play. I've started up businesses in like South Milwaukee that serve the underprivileged and the inner city. We had one called Homeboys, where basically we took former gang members who wanted a new life, and we trained them. We taught them how to be computer programmers or network administrators, and then we got them jobs. You know, again, they took the stuff I was already doing before I became a Jesuit, and then they just made me do it, but for the church. And for the church, I mean, for the betterment of the people. Most of the people who were affected by my work were not Catholic. In fact, most of them weren't even Christian. It was just one of this idea of, does this make the world a better place? Yes. Okay, then we do it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So most people that see you and know you on the internet, obviously you've talked about stuff before, but like, again, I know you. I know you as a person. I've watched you 100 things. I didn't understand how it worked, because I'm sitting there all the time thinking like, how's this dude like got the cloth and he's wearing a thing and he's still out here talking about like, don't you have sermons to give on Sunday somewhere? Like, isn't that part of like the routine that you have to do? But I like the fact that it sounds like if you're a Jesuit, you're part of a team. And it's kind of like going into the military, the Air Force. You know, my dad always used to say, he's like, look, you don't always have to carry a gun and shoot people. They need mechanics. They need engineers. They need, like, there's all kinds of things that you could do to serve your country that doesn't involve killing someone. And I'm not to compare those two, but that's what that sounds like to me. And that sounds awesome.
That's exactly it. And actually, the founder of our order, St. Ignatius of Loyola, he was a soldier. And so our hierarchy is really built on a military organization. It's funny that you mentioned that, Doctor, because I always get people who maybe the first time they meet me, or if they're coming back as a troll, and they'll say, oh, you know, here's Father Robert talking about a $10,000 blah, 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 blah. How come he's not working with the poor? Or how come he's not, you know, giving a homily and not giving a sermon? And, you know, my response to that is, you don't understand. I'm part of a bigger whole. And we all get that we all fill in different parts of that big whole. Now, I've lived in fields. I've lived with farm workers, migrant farm workers. I've done that experience. But right now, this is what I've been asked to do. And I take pride in the fact that I have brothers who are working directly with the poor. And I have a brother right now who is organizing relief efforts in Puerto Rico. Anyway, he's someone I lived with for 4 years.
That's like, again, this sounds awesome. Because the thing that with trolls and some people don't understand is, even when you're doing a mission, someone's booking the travel, someone's communicating the supplies, someone's handling all the logistics, and those people don't need to be on the ground, because you also need people back home to facilitate the logistics. If you're going to be there for 3 months doing X, Y, and Z, you need a consistent route of supplies. It's not like everybody just goes on a mission to Cambodia and it says, oh, we got everything we need. No, things are going to change once you hit the ground. Things are going to change in the field. And again, I didn't know that that's how that worked, but hearing that, that's makes complete and total sense. And it also, and I'm sure churches also do the same thing. Now, there's always logistics of things, but the fact that you're doing things in technology and they didn't pigeonhole you into doing something is the key to that whole situation. They found that you were good at this, and then they put you to work with what you were good at, and you helped in ways that other people couldn't.
Right. And that's that thing that I mentioned. They find the thing you do. They find your passion, your skill, and they'll find a way to use it. I love that about the Jesuits. And that's really kind of unique among the religious orders in the Catholic Church. And I'll go one step further. You know, you were talking about how, like, not everyone can be the ex, the soldier, or the relief worker. I'd say if you're going to run an organization as big as this is, it's not just that not everyone can do that job. It's if you have everyone trying to do that job, nothing works. Yes. You know, you got you got to have the logistics people. You got to have the workers who are behind the scene.
I was talking. I'm starting to do a tech show finally on my own. We're talking about the Walmart situation with them coming into your home and everything. And it's laughable because the general consensus of a Walmart employee is underpaid, can't give full time because they don't want to give benefits. And so you're going to send this disgruntled worker into my home to put food in my fridge. And I said, if these hires were paid and interviewed and hired on the basis of Chick-fil-A, come in my house. Like, if Chick-fil-A said they wanted to deliver food to my crib, I'd be fine with it. Because everybody they hire is happy or fired. Like, it's annoying sometimes when I go to Chick-fil-A how happy everybody is. And I got my little personal problem with Chick-fil-A, but the chicken's good. So sometimes you just got to sacrifice.
Exactly,
I know
yeah.
hypocrisy of the world. But the joy that these people have that makes me sick, those people could come into my home. So again, finding the right people to do the job that you need them to do is everything. And forcing someone to do something doesn't mean they're going to do a good job at it because they're just doing enough to get by and just to get the job done. Finding out what you're good at, helping you grow in that, teaching you, helping you evolve in that, giving you confidence in that, and then support, that's how you get the best employee or worker or Jesuit for that situation because that person feels empowered. They feel pride in their work. They're happy. They want to do a good job because they know they're a part of a system and they have to do what they need to do so the other person can do their job. But Walmart's like, I can't let these people in my home. Walmart has a horrible track record in business besides cheap prices, you know? So there's a lot to that in the way people are utilized for their job and hiring the right person for the job. So I'm super excited to hear that. That was a good tidbit of information. Learn something new, you know? See, people don't ask questions too. The reason I, you know, hang out with my Jewish friends is because I just want to know. You know, I sit there and I'm like, we got to wait 2 hours to eat because we got to tell the story of the suffrage. I'm like, why can't we just fast forward to this? And he's like, you have to suffer. That's part of the thing. You got to suffer. So this is us suffering, you know. And for the kids, they learn it quick because the kids at that table, it is a suffrage. They're like, oh, we just want to eat and we're just out here. We got to hear the same stories, you know. But it's a tradition and it's interesting and I like learning new things.
Wait. Do you do the Seder supper every year?
Yeah.
Oh, so who's the youngest? Who gets to read the story?
So they do it where they have like a multi-family. So sometimes there's been 20, 30 people there. And their little gimmick thing is, one, I had to read, the new person has to read. So anybody could get it. You know, they have a little part where they make the kids read, but I had to read. Like, I was like, what I got a script for? Like, I'm not Jewish. You're like, hey, you're sitting at the table. You know, you got to be a part. And then I'm sitting there. So the first year I went, I had to read. And it was like, you're killing me. And they, you know, a lot of them already have stuff memorized. But this family is really fun. They do stuff with the kids where they sing songs. Like, it's really great the way they do it. So, like, they're singing these songs. And again, I got to, since I'm not Jewish, I have to participate with all the stuff that the kids do.
Of course.
And I get a little piece of reading on my own that I had to do. And then everybody gets to sit around and laugh when they make me eat like a piece of bonefish and the lox and all that kind of stuff that you got to eat before they
salt water, lots of bread.
Yeah, before they break out the good food. And I'm like, it's killing me inside. So I have suffered with the children. And it's fun. The next year I went, I took my daughter and I made her suffer too. Because I'm not going to be the only one.
Good man.
Yeah, she's all the time. She's like, I want to do the religion with the matzo ball soup. She's like, can we show up late? I'm like, nope, you show up late, you don't get to eat.
You don't eat. You just don't eat.
You don't eat. You got to show up one time. Like I said, everybody suffer together. So it's fun. And like I said, I like seeing different people's cultures and learning things. That it helps balance me so I don't rage out on anybody like some people do in the world because they don't understand other people's religions. So let's backtrack to you being 8, having a business and making all this money and not giving me my cut. So what What were you doing at 8 years old that you were out here in these streets making guapole and soda company? What company did you start? What was it?
It was RNA Professional Consultants. We were a computer consultation firm. And you got to remember, this was back in the early 80s. So there wasn't any idea like this. There were companies that made computers, and computers were still very nascent, very early days. And we would do things like, okay, you want to buy a computer? We recognized that the future wasn't in selling you a computer, because a computer was eventually going to have no margins. We saw that, because as soon as there started being clones, we're like, look, at some point, they're going to price us out. Yeah. So the money wasn't in selling the hardware. The money was in selling the service. You want to set up a lab at your university. You contract with us for 3 years to do the service, and we will sell you the computers at cost. And that was the deal. And it hadn't been done. I mean, now that's typical. That's like every startup ever. We're going to give you something for free so that you yeah. start up with our service. But back in the 80s, that was one of these, wait, you're not making any money on the hardware? But that's where everyone is making their money. And it was sort of like, yeah, but you tell me if you're making money in 6 months, because I will be. And yeah, that's what we did. Super simple business idea. But back then, because it hadn't really been tried, it did incredibly well.
Who's the CEO?
Me.
At 8 years old? Oh, so you out here Doogie Howsering?
We didn't have CEOs. Games. There was me, my dad.
I want to know, when somebody made a phone call, who was answering these calls? Who were they talking? Were they talking to a young 8-year-old Thundercat making moves and selling the product? Or were they talking to dad?
I hired a receptionist.
Baller.
That's how it worked.
Baller. I mean, I get it. I'm just trying to figure out like the level of genius that you had going on at 8 years old, to which I'm going to be very upset at my daughter right now. I mean, you know, it's like, what is she doing? She's not doing anything for me. She should be out here making me this money. And now I'm going to be very upset. We're going to have a conversation tomorrow. Why aren't you starting a business? Why aren't you funding me? And why haven't you given me a job yet? Because 8 years old, that's crazy. And
yeah, but, you know, back then we also didn't have really strict labor laws.
Well, so that's one thing that drives me crazy. You see a lot of young entrepreneurs now. There's a kid that makes bow ties. He learned how to sew from his grandmother. He makes bow ties. He sells them himself. Now he sells them to, like, upper echelon boutiques in New York. Mm-hmm. And no one says, oh, well, you got this kid sewing, whatever. Because he wants to do it, and he's making really good money doing it. There's another kid who learned how to bake cookies from his mom, and he made his own cookies, and they were better than his mom's. And he has a wheelbarrow, and he goes around to local businesses, and he sells buckets of cookies every day. And he spends his whole weekend making these cookies. It's not, people say, oh, why you got the kids working? These parents are exploiting the kids. The kids probably doesn't even want to do it. And maybe that's some of the case, but a lot of these kids, that's what they're into. And you want to encourage kids to do something. You want to encourage them to work. And so many people say kids nowadays don't do this, don't do that. So child labor laws, ham sandwiches, who cares? Again, I got to get my daughter out. She got to do something for me. I mean, I tried to protect her from the world, you know, because being connected to things, like I have friends that do modeling and commercials in New York, and they're like, oh, you know, your daughter's cute, you know, she's got the right look, you should have her come up there. And I'm like, I don't want to spend her summers running her around to auditions to go do something. Shout out to me being a baby model back in 84. I was in the Macy's magazine 2 times, got a couple nice checks back then, but I don't want to do that to her. So I've been trying to let her be a kid. And now she wants to start doing her own show and all that kind of stuff. And I'll start easing her into that. But I've kept her away from that because it's a fine line. You see some of these kids on YouTube where they're making 5 videos a day reviewing toys. And you think, oh, yeah, that's fun time. And then you come to find out that they've got a monster in the back of them talking about play with these toys so we can make $1 million off a YouTube hit. So, yeah, labor laws, what? I guess.
Isn't that horrible if you were to take the fun out of your child's playtime? I mean, playtime is designed to be fun. It's not work.
Yeah.
And if, oh, man, to turn that into a business. Now, I've done crappy jobs. I mean, that was part of the deal. My parents wanted that of me also because we kind of had to take any jobs we could.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, you know, I've worked fast food. I've done McDonald's. I've waited tables. I had a job where I was basically crawling. This is when I was tiny. I was crawling through tanks you know, like water tanks to resurface the inside of them. That built up what I wanted to do. It made it clear to me. I'm like, I can't do this for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
This will kill me eventually. So I better figure out what it is that I want. And I was lucky enough to be growing up in an era where the thing that I love, technology, was kind of blossoming and I could make a living at it. That was awesome.
It's so crazy because, again, like, you don't want, like you said, you want to instill a work ethic in kids. So my daughter just got, she's doing safety at school, which is, I call that charity work, right? I told her that's community service. She's like, oh, I got a job. Like, oh, they're not paying you. It's not really a job. It's like, that's like charity work. You're out here doing some charity, you know? But she's got to get up early before all the other kids and get to school. Half hour, 45 minutes for the kids. So now she has to wake up early. She has to stay 15 minutes later than all the other kids. So that is taking something from her. And she's got to wear this thing all day, which that's the one thing she doesn't like. She's like, I got to wear this thing all the time to show that I'm a safety. Yeah, because you have to show that you're a leader and responsible. And if something happened, they know to look to you and go to you and all that stuff because she's helping the little kids. And then she got a job on Saturdays reffing soccer games. Now, this job pays $10 a game. So now she's got like
That's a job. That's a legit job.
You know, so again, she's got to get up early on every Saturday now where she was sleeping in. And she's got to get out there and run around, chase these kids. And she was like, oh, this is going to be easy. Next thing you know, she's very athletic, lean, whatever. I make her run laps after everything in sports. But she's like, Dad, these kids are fast. Like, I am tired. I'm like, this feels so small. She's like, I feel like this is worse than me playing real soccer. Like, real soccer, I can run to the ball. This is just like, they don't know what they're doing. And it is true because they're so little. You know, they're half the time they're shooting on the wrong goals and stuff. But I'm like, hey, that's what work is. Sometimes work isn't fun. You thought it was going to be fun out here playing, chasing these little kids in soccer. Yeah, you're getting wore out. So she has a job. And I'm like, yeah, she's got a job. Yay. She beat me by 2 years. My first job, I worked at my high school, cleaning up gum and lockers. And let me tell you, that changed my whole outlook throughout high school about stop writing on that desk, put that gum in the trash. Don't you chew gum. We're not allowed to have gum in school. I know what's going to happen. Put the gum in the trash. I was all over everybody for everything because I thought it was the worst thing in the world spending my summers cleaning off desks and lockers and things of the sort. So work is good. It's good for kids, especially it teaches them responsibility as long as they're doing it right. But some people are just like, I showed my daughter because she wanted to make videos, and I found this one mom who you could hear her. Now, she posts these videos. I don't think she knew she could hear herself, but she was like, say this, do that, do this, say this, not like that, like this. And I told her, I was like, you don't want me to be like that. Like, you want to do it on your own and have fun. So I was like,
you know what that is? That's the soccer mom who is screaming obscenities at the Pee Wee League because she wants them to play better. And I had to stop doing those because I couldn't handle those parents anymore. Because, you know, we've got that here at the high school even.
It's crazy, too. I had one instance where I had to where I was like about to lose it on a kid. And mind you, my daughter played the mixed league and this boy kept elbowing her. An elbow in the chest. And my daughter's just looking at me. She's like, Dad. And I'm like, yo. And the ref caught it once. He's like, he went over and talked to him. And the kid kept doing it. And not for because she's a girl. It's just because it's not right. So I said, yo, whoever kid this is, tell your kid to stop elbowing her. And the guy was like, well, let the ref call the game. And I said, okay. So he elbowed Leah one more time. And I said, Leah, if he elbows you again, lay him out. And she's like, punch him in the face. I was like, Leah, if he does again, lay him out. And his eyes lit up. And the dad's like, whoa. And I'm like, just watch what happens, bro. Just watch what happens. And the dad was like, hey, calm down, Tyler. I'm like, and that's all you had to do is say to your son. All you had to do is tell your son to calm down. Because it's soccer. It's not, you know, you're not supposed to throw elbows at people's throats and stuff like that. It's not the way the game's supposed to be played. And everybody's looking at me like, oh, I was like, don't look at me like I'm that dad. Because I let it go for a long time. And again, I didn't say I was going to beat this kid up. I told my kid to beat that kid up because, you know, Leah's been doing MMA and karate and jiu-jitsu since she was 4. So she can handle herself. But again, she's nice enough to say, I'll let him do it. I'm like, you can't do that. You can't let people do that because they shouldn't do it. And I tell her all the time, like, look, don't start a fight. Protect yourself. If somebody's hitting you, you got to protect yourself. And that's a rough, road situation to be in anyway when you're a girl, you know, let alone. I just want her to be able to go in the world and not worry about it. That's all. When she goes out on a date, I don't want to have to be praying to nobody. I don't want to have to be begging. I don't have to be in the car stalking. I know that she can protect herself and take care of herself. So that's most important. What's your favorite food?
Oh, going to go straight to the big one.
Oh, yeah. We got to jump ship. What's your favorite food?
Probably right now it's got to be Vietnamese food. Either pho or a bún bò huế, which is like a spicy noodle dish.
I love that. A bún bò huế.
It's good stuff, man.
I don't know what that is, but I like the sound of it.
If you ever come to San Francisco, I will treat you to some good bún bò huế.
Yeah, I'm actually getting back on my travel horse. So it's usually when I sneak into the city, I got to work and then I jump out. But I will be back for leisure and try and get myself into the Twit House so we can go get some a bún bò huế. What's your favorite dessert?
Oh, you know, it used to be cheesecake, but yeah, the body's like, no, the cheesecake's done, bro.
I love cheesecake is my number one. I love cheesecake.
Yeah.
That's my birthday cake every year. I get cheesecake for my birthday. So that's my birthday cake. I love cheesecake.
So I know I don't do cheesecake anymore. Now what I do is turon, which is, it's a Filipino. Think of it like a plantain. So not a banana, but a plantain. So it's more dense. It's not as sweet. And then you cover it in brown sugar and you deep fry it.
I mean, you were good until you got to the deep fried part. Like, I was like, okay. So you switch from cheesecake. You know what I mean? It's a little too rich, a little too lush. You know what I mean? It's hard on the body. But then you went and then you deep fried the banana. And I want some of that, too.
It's basically a deep fried caramelized banana.
Yeah. I love plantains, but plantains are amazing, especially when they're done right. Shout out to Puerto Rico right now. They're in a struggle. We're going to get back to regular line of questioning, but Puerto Rico right now, someone got upset with me because they misunderstood me earlier. I basically said, shut Puerto Rico down. Puerto Rico's done. Send down military planes. Bring everyone here. They're in debt. No one wants to help them with the debt. The government and the hedge funds have robbed them of any means of repaying the debt. The island is literally destroyed and devastated. Yeah. And they're not going to spend the money on the infrastructure to rebuild it because this debt is so high. So I don't know what's really going to happen for that place. And they have no means or way to even think about it. They're saying 6 months for power. It's going to be a lot longer than that because the funds aren't available. I'm like, send down military planes and fly them all up here and stick them in New Mexico or like North Dakota or somewhere. Just find some government land and just rebuild Puerto Rico up here. And my friend was like, you can't do that. You sound heartless. I'm like, I'm not being heartless. There's so many people down there on dialysis that are dead or dying. There's no power. There's no medication. People have high blood pressure. Children need medication, allergies. They're in the middle of a heat wave. The disease from the water and the... It's so, people are not talking about Puerto Rico because people kind of don't care about Puerto Rico because they're like part America, not America, real America. We are America, right. Not America. Mm-hmm. So they play that game where they're not understanding that they're on an isolated island with nothing.
Yep.
And I don't know how you fix it right now besides just get them off the island. Get everybody up here. And then work it out. I'm like, I know, because they're not refugees. They're citizens. It's such a massive issue right now. And we seem to not have a leader that is capable of grasping the issue. And I just want all those people up here. I just said, you know, I was like, I don't know what else to do. We can figure it out once they get here. But just, we got, send out every military plane, get them up here. You know, send a fleet out, send a carrier, and just get them here. Because...
It's interesting that you bring that up because I was having a conversation with one of the parents here. We had a school night. And the parents came in and they sat in their child's classes. And during one of the breaks, the question of Puerto Rico came up. And I was talking about, well, you know, if there's one thing that might come out of this is maybe with all the devastation now being on TV 24/7, maybe people will have an honest conversation about the fact that Puerto Rico is in a horrible financial situation that is unrecoverable. Not just bad, there's no way it will ever get better. And he did the typical line of, well, you know, they have to be fiscally responsible, so on. And it's like, I get that, but here's the thing. Our Congress, the U.S. Congress, are the ones responsible for that debt. Yes. They they allowed some horrible, horrible deals to go through, including one with a Mr. Donald Trump that built the island of millions and billions of dollars and will continue to do so unless that debt is forgiven, which they are not willing to. If they're not willing to forgive that debt, that place can never be rebuilt. That economy will never boom again. I mean, it would be like basically where Puerto Rico is right now. It's a debtor's prison. It's we're going to give you a horrible life until you pay back this debt. And you have the people going, well, if we have a horrible life, how will we ever make enough money to pay back the debt? That's your problem.
And
that's.
And there's no way for them to get the money back. You know, again,
yeah.
Trump built a golf course there. He shut the golf course down. Then he put a $600 million tab on the people that they have to pay. And that's just him personally. So the other companies that did it where they just, you know, similar to what happened in Venezuela, where right now they're just screwed and these people are suffering. And the difference is Puerto Ricans are U.S. citizens. They have passports. They could come
here.
They're Americans. So just leave the island. Leave the island. But I know I know that it's just so insane because it's a logistical nightmare, and I know it's not really going to happen. And honestly, those people love their home, and they don't want to leave, and they have pride and all that kind of stuff. But I just want them all out.
No. But I'm with you. I understand what you're saying. You're saying, okay, look, this is the only thing we can do.
Yes.
What else is, unless you're willing to renegotiate the debt and change all those horrible, horrible laws that were put into place, then what other option is there?
And to the point where, again, somebody got really upset with me. It took me 20 minutes just to explain. I'm like, look, I'm not saying forget Puerto Ricans. I'm saying forget Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is done. It is over with. And the only thing that might save Puerto Rico is, I don't know what their population is, but if the government looks at it and says, wow, we can't have X million Puerto Ricans just coming into America, flooding Florida, New York, wherever, let's give them aid and try to fix it.
Right. Oh, which, by the way, for those folks who may be differently minded, remember, this is not immigration. They're Americans.
They're Americans.
They can come. They have every legal right to come over here. So, yeah.
and that's where I said, just, you know, if I was the president, that would have, the thing that I don't understand is, for all the things you mandate and all the little bills that Ryan puts in front of you and you just sign these huge menu documents that you don't even know what they say, you can't make an executive order that has the strongest, largest military in the world. When he said, it's not like it's down the street, we can't just send trucks there. We spend billions of dollars on planes that never get off the ground. We could literally send an army there, invade that nation, rescue everybody, and bring them back in 3 weeks. Because we deploy that many people to go and destroy nations in less time and build facilities. Build, you know, $100 million bases and stuff like that. Like, we have the logistical know-how to do it. And the fact that he just won't say, there's millions of people suffering, we're going to go get the elderly and the sick first, okay? Let's just go get all of them. If you even did that, I'd be like, wow, bro,
yeah,
I might
kudos.
Even vote for you. Like, yeah. you could get my vote on some humanitarian stuff. But the fact that, oh, well, you know, it's not easy just to send trucks across. They're in the water. They're in the middle of the ocean. Like, but we're America. Like, we could.
Well, you know, Owen, the hospital ship that we have left this morning. It's like, this morning, why wasn't this not dispatched the day that the hurricanes first hit Puerto Rico? It's going to take 3 to 4 days for it to get down there. That's ridiculous. It's like, what, wasn't anybody thinking about this? Aid made it to Hawaii, made it to Florida and to Houston almost immediately.
Yeah.
And you didn't think that it was going to be more complicated to get to Puerto Rico. So you're only sending out relief ships now? It's like, there's 1.5 million people without water right now. You think they're going to last 4 or 5 days?
And shout out to, like, Mark Cuban, who one of his players, Puerto Rican, he gave him his plane, filled it up with water. There's other people organizing flights that are just loaded up with water just to go. And I'm like, why? This is one thing I don't like at all. I don't like when we do all these pledge drives and people gave $100 million or whatever. my tax dollars, and this is a big complaint. I shouldn't be talking about this on the show with you because it's just because you're a like-minded person. We spend all this money on war, and we could destroy anything at any given notice. That same military should be there at the drop of a dime to save and rescue people. They have the ability to make bridges out of oxygen. They have machinery. They have tanks. They could just, you know, you've seen the bridge truck, right? Where it just goes into a thing and it's like, blop, it transforms like a transformer. They could get places. Like, we can literally do anything but help our own people. And it's up to you and me to donate $10 to the Red Cross and the football players and the actors. And we're doing do a triathlon. Why? This is when the government should do something. This is when socialism doesn't matter, because those politicians in Texas who didn't want to help us up here in New Jersey surely were saying, where's the aid and how quick can it get here? I know we voted for New Jersey not to get it, but we need it now. And that's the scumminess of the world. But again, neither here nor there. There's still a lot of good people in the world like you and I and ourselves. Let me ask you a real question. Since y'all were down in technology, how come you didn't spend $10 on some Apple stock and be a billionaire and not be wasting your time talking to me? Who missed a boat on that? Was it you or your dad? What's going on?
Before I was any sort of tech journalist, I was actually heavily invested in Apple.
Okay.
And that made a very nice sum for my family.
Okay, good, good. Now I feel better about it, because I always think in my mind, my grandfather bought a piece of land and it ended up being very good for our family. And I'm like, man, the land did good, but if you just would have put $30 in any kind of tech, but they were farmers, and what they knew was land and real estate and things like that. So I'm glad you got a piece of the pie, and that makes me feel a little bit better. I was about to say, how are you missing out?
Although I do have to say this, because I wanted to play above the board, in 2007, I basically divested myself of all tech stocks. Because I didn't want ever to be there to be a question about, oh, I'm talking this company up because it's going to make me money. In 2007, that was a nice sum. That made us a lot of money. But if we had held on to that for five more years, it would have been an ungodly amount of money.
So no, why'd you tell me that? Now you got me right back on. Now I'm about to berate you and yell at you like, what are you doing? What are you doing?
Well, no. I wanted to play fair, right? I mean,
No. You don't play fair. You don't play fair. And I'm gonna make you feel guilty about it too. Do you know how many people in Puerto Rico you could have saved if you would have just held on to that stock? I'm blaming this on you. Forget 45. You could have saved Puerto Rico. We could have bought two planes and had a whole truckload of water. But no, you had to be responsible, ethical, and care about the world. Shame on you. Shame this man. What are you doing? Horrible. I totally understand what you're saying. Again, that's what I was talking about earlier before we got started. People all the time like, I don't even know why you're on Twitter. You're not a tech journalist. You don't write anywhere. And the first thing I say to them is like, okay, but anybody can read a published report and tell you what the stats are. You know, somebody's like, I'd rather trust someone who was at the event and held the phone. I'm like, you know, they only get to touch the phone for 5 minutes each, right? Like, how much do you get to learn from the phone on launch day besides what they want you to? They want you to look at the phone, hold the phone. It's like, an opinion is an opinion, and you might not like mine, but it's not the fact that I don't know about technology. I just care about technology a different way. I also don't get caught up in the bubble because, as you know, living there, the same thing you're just saying. You can get accused of things, swept up in moments, and think something's great when you don't have an objective view on it. So the same way you're saying, I love living on the East Coast and going to soccer games and seeing all these moms with Samsungs, because Samsung gives you two free phones and they've got a family of four and they can't afford everybody to have iPhones. So I know iPhones is selling a lot in the market, but a lot of people are using these devices, and not for nothing, they all make phone calls, they all take pictures. It's a personal preference of, you know, what is quote unquote better, because depending on who you're talking to is what you're going to get, at least nowadays in technology.
I will say, though, you were right on, because over the weekend I got about 3.5 hours hands on time with the iPhone 10. Don't ask me how. I got sources here, and it's nice. It is a beautiful phone. I'm not so certain about the face scanning as password, but the big thing for me, the thing that I it was a deal breaker. I'm like, oh yeah, this is going to tick a lot of people off, is you don't realize how much you use the home button. And there is no home button on the 10. And it is maddening, because now it's gone from maybe two actions to launch what you want to 4 to 6 actions to do the same thing. And when people start seeing that, they're going to go, wait a minute, why did you remove the home button if it's required for so many things? And fans are going to say, oh yeah, maybe that wasn't a good idea.
What is what phone are you currently using for your personal phone?
My personal phone is a OnePlus One.
Okay.
It's like a 4-year-old, 5-year-old phone, something like that.
Yeah. So I guess the size factor wouldn't be an issue to you. I was going to ask you how it felt having that 10 being smaller.
Yeah.
Because it's not the plus size. You're getting more screen real estate. But again, my thing is I can't go back to a smaller phone. My daughter has a 6S, and another friend was trying to sell their 7. And I was like, here, I can get you the 7. The camera's better because she loves taking pictures. And she put it in her hand. She's like, I can't use this. Like, she just refused. And she's got tiny hands. She's like, I can't. I'll keep this. I don't know if this is older, but it's bigger, right? It still works. I'm like, yeah. She's like, I'll keep the bigger one. She can't go back to a smaller form factor. So that's my first issue. I'm used to having that bigger device in my hand, and my hands are big, and I like the real estate. So we're going to see what happens. I know a lot of people weren't buying the 8, and hopefully they were holding off for the 10, and that's going to help Apple out a little bit. But it was definitely interesting. We'll see what happens. What's your favorite piece of technology? Go ahead. Tell me what you want to talk about.
Favorite piece of technology? Gosh, that's a good question. Probably a router, just because it's changed the way that we've connected. I mean, everything that we value today, from this very broadcast to the internet to all the knowledge that we can gather, happens because we've got technology that does routing. None of this would exist without that. So that's big on my list.
Answer. What router you rocking? Since we're non-solicited with stocks, what router you rocking?
I'm rocking a Synology 2600 AC. It's made by a company that used to make just storage products, and it is an incredible device. You know, and in fact, tomorrow on KnowHow, one of the things I'm going to be demoing is Megan Maroney and I are going to show some strategies for making your kids sleep. You know, basically shutting off the devices at night. And that's one of the features you can do on this router. The dad or the mom can have like a little app saying, nope, kids off. And they lose their internet connectivity. And it's incredible like that. It's, you know, it's thinking about things that make technology easier to use for non-techies. I love when a company does that.
So that's great. Side note, just for some back information for you. One, have a charging station for the family, where it's outside of the bedroom. Where, okay, you're going to bed, you plug your device in on the table,
great idea,
or the counter.
Yeah.
You go to your bed without a device. Secondly, side note of just responsibility. Like, my daughter's had a device of her own since she was 4. Two things I do. I gave her a backpack, and I said, you don't have the bag without the phone. The phone goes with the bag. So she goes to a friend's house, and she leaves. She doesn't have the bag. She doesn't have the phone. She walks out with the phone, doesn't have the bag. Like, it always triggers her to remember her phone.
Right.
Secondly,
right.
We're in a car. No phones in the car. I have comic books and graphic novels in there, so she reads in the car. And when her friends get in the car, she tells them, my dad, you're not allowed to use them. And they do. They read, they talk, whatever else they're going to do. So no devices in the vehicle, which I know is something that people like to give their kids to brainwash them, but you can give them coloring books or something else. Just time where they know the screen isn't available to them. So I could take my phone from my daughter right now. She won't huff and puff. My other friends, they take their phone to their kid. The kid cries like they want their device. My daughter doesn't have anxiety about it. Secondly and lastly, at nighttime, her phone is used. You can use Pandora, we use Apple Music, but her phone is her lullaby music. So I say, I say, go to bed. We have a playlist. She plays it. Now she's in there watching a show. I hear the show. If I don't hear music, hey, what are you doing? You know what I mean? So, but by giving her, okay, it's bedtime. She goes in there. She puts her playlist on. She plays music. She falls asleep, because who looks at a screen with a playlist on it? You know what I mean? So
I'm using this. I'm using all of this. These are great parenting tips.
So when the music's on, if I walk by, and it's happened, I walk by, I don't hear the music, and I'm like, aren't you supposed to be going to bed? Oh, I'm setting the alarm for the morning. Oh, okay. Well, let's hear that playlist. Let's hear the music. And then, you know, sometimes I'll go in and turn it off after she's fallen asleep. But it gives her something where she has her own responsibility and a system in place that she can do what she needs to do. And when she wakes up in the morning, it's the same thing. All right. You can watch whatever show you want. If I come in here, you're not dressed, you're losing your phone. She has to do 25. I just might as well tell you since you want. I give you some information for her phone to pay for her phone. She does 25 sit-ups and push-ups every day. If she doesn't do that, she loses her phone for a day. Because I have to pay for it. You have to work and pay for it. Also, since she wants to start doing photography and all this other stuff, I'm going to slow roll her. I said, okay. So now you do 25 sit-ups, 25 push-ups, and you have to post something every day. So you have to take a picture of something and practice your craft. You know, you asked me to buy you this camera for your birthday. Well, I need a picture every day. So every day, she does 25 sit-ups, 25 push-ups, and she posts on Instagram. If I get there done at night, there's no post on Instagram, your phone's gone for the day.
Dango, doctor, you're good at this. Yeah, I'm really good at this.
I'm doing all right at parenting, especially with technology stuff. So, but that's some tips for you and for anybody else who wants to use them because they're great. Last question. So, as being a religious person, a father, you're in your thing, like a Jesuit, you're not allowed to get married. I don't understand how that works. So again,
question. Yeah. So, I'm an order priest, but it's the same thing you would expect from just a standard priest. So I can't get married. I live in a community. I've taken three vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. That's basically my life. So it's not that I live in abject poverty. I mean, if you look around right now, this is one of my labs and I've got every kind of tool I might need. But if I get reassigned to some place that doesn't need all this stuff, I don't take any of it with me. So I don't actually own anything. Things are given to me to use while I need them. And then when I don't need them, they get given to somebody else.
And that's why throughout this conversation, every time you talked about profit and gaining money, you were talking about helping the family because you would give it to your family.
Yeah. Like I get a very nice salary from Twit, way nicer than I probably should. But I don't see a dime. It goes straight to the church. I get basically $250 for like a 4-month period. And that covers all my expenses because I have a place to live. I will have food here. I just have to worry about transportation and my incidentals. That's enough. It makes life really, really simple.
How do you do that? Like, so what is your brother doing right now?
My brother's an instructor. He's a teacher.
Okay. Does he have family, wife, kids?
He has a wife. He has two kids.
So you're an uncle.
I am an uncle. And basically, I borrow his kids every once in a while so I can pretend like I'm a parent.
Okay, because not for nothing. I'm not trying to pull you out of the cloth. You would be a great father. You would be a great parent. You would be a great steward of children and a leader of men and or women. And there's so many nine of those people in the world just popping out babies. So when I just thought about the fact of how awesome you are and the fact that you can't give, well, you are, you do, and you will grace a lot of knowledge among the youth throughout your lifetime, throughout your service and dedication. I just wish you were out here directly generating children so we could have more smart kids in the world, because I'm not doing it. Apparently my daughter ain't made me no money yet. So I gotta work on her. She's going to sit here, watch this interview and figure out what she's doing wrong to get me a check. But, that's again, knowing you and not knowing your situation. One, thank you for your service to that and to people and to helping. Again, people don't know what other people do. You know, I do charity work where I help a battered woman shelter in Philadelphia, and it's not something that I talk about because a lot of those women are undercover and trying to get away from certain situations. So I don't talk about it, and people don't understand like what it takes to help people. You know, sometimes people don't want to help themselves. Same thing we're talking about Puerto Rico. Sometimes they can't help themselves. And I'm not as good as you. I do the little bits that I can.
Because everyone does what they can, man. That's how it works.
I'm gonna still say it. You better than me. I'm gonna still say it. You know what I mean? No. You don't have to agree with me. I agree. Look, I can't. Look, poverty. I've lived in poverty. I know what poverty living is like. It was forced upon me, and the second time was by choice. And people. Like you said, you get by and you manage and you realize what things are important. The house I'm living in now is a 1,200 square foot house. Last year, I was in a 3,000 square foot house, 3-car garage. It's only me and my daughter. I'm saying to myself, what am I doing? Now, mind you, I had a spare room, and even now, one of my friends lost their job, and now they're staying with me, and I let them stay with me rent-free, you know what I mean, while they save up. And I've done this so much. My daughter asked me one time if I was gay. She's like, you don't ever have a girlfriend, Dad? Like, what? You know, why? I was like, no. I was like, look, they're hard on their luck, and they need a place to stay. And I slept in my car for 6 months in the winter.
Yeah.
So I know what it's like being prideful and not asking for help, where if I can help somebody else and say, hey, my bills are already paid. You have a roof over your head. You have a place to wash your clothes, food. You save up your money and get back on the road. Like, and you're good. And I do that for people because I know that how hard it is. And I hope that if something ever happened to me on hard times, that somebody would do it for me. But again, people don't understand the sacrifice that people do. And I didn't understand how you were living life and how things were and how you were going about things. But it's very impressive. You should have just traveled all, gave all the stock to me in 2007. That's all I'm saying. I know we weren't friends. We could have put it in a bond or something because you just, you know, we could have saved Puerto Rico. I want you to go to sleep tonight just knowing that. I'm putting a little guilt in your heart because you just out there. We could have billions. We could have been rich. I could have been flying on gold planes in outer space.
Well, we worked it out. If we held on to the position that we had in 2007 when I sold it, it would now be worth 8 figures.
Woo! See? Gold planes. We could have been flying in spaceships. So I'm going to ask you this last question about technology. What is something that excites you about the future of technology right now? What's something that you're looking forward to or that you're excited about right now that you want or you wish we had? What is it?
Okay. It's going to sound cliche because I know there's been a lot of people talking about it, but it's really two items that are parallel in development. The first is neural networking, deep networking. That's computers that can learn. Computers that have the ability to do things that we didn't tell them to do. And then the other parallel piece of that is artificial intelligence. We have semi-AI right now, but at some point, the state of the art will evolve to the point at which we can actually have interactions with our technology rather than just using our technology as tools. And when I mean interactions, I mean they can make our lives better. They can do some of the work that we don't want to do. And we can have a relatively high confidence level that they're going to do it the way that we would ask them to do it. And you know, I'm starting to see some of this. I've been gone to a couple of conferences. I've presented on some conferences on robotics. And yeah, of course, there's a scary super media side of it that looks at this as, you know, this is the coming of Skynet. But really, what we're talking about is developing our technology to a level of perfection that we didn't think was possible except in science fiction. That's amazing because once we get to that point, there's an explosion because, well, you know, it's all of our thought, all of our effort into one thing. And once we reach that, once we have perfected AI and perfected deep learning and neural learning, then we have no idea what's on the other side. We have no idea what will be developed because we can't think of it. That's amazing to me.
So let me take that into two parts. It was the same thing I said when we're talking about the future of the Echo devices, the Google Homes, the Bixby, the Siri. Whoever creates the Cortanas, whoever makes the system that makes the perfect assistant that can actually give me tangible information all the time, every time, the same way I Googled it myself or searched it myself, is going to win because that is what I figure out is the future of mobile devices, where I could just talk to that device and it does what I need to do in a competent way and understanding. The second
it's Jarvis.
Part, yes.
It's Jarvis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Give me a Jarvis and we are living in a golden age. But at the same time, when you use the words AI, you say the words AI, I know you tipped on the scary. Here's the thing. As a man of faith and as a man of the cloth, you also know the evil that men do, right? So there are people who, again, no one's perfect, and a sin is a sin, and right is wrong, and wrong is right, and all that stuff. But there are more egregious things than others. And once you perfect this AI, again, same thing, we roll back to the whole universe and the God thing. It's created by man. The same thing when I tell people about the Bible is written by man. Man is flawed. Man is corrupt. So even if you want to believe in everything that's in that Bible, it was written by someone who you kind of cannot trust because you don't know who wrote it. Perfect example, the King James Version. A man wanted to do something different, so he wrote his own version. And that is what men do. So in the creation of AI and meeting that perfect complex, I am scared to death that they're like, look, humans are crazy. We got to get rid. The Skynet thing is real. The whole concept of that is legit because once you create something that learns, evolves, matures, processes on its own, talks to itself, it's either going to do like that movie Her, where they go off into their own ethosphere and say, look, we're out. We're going to go into our own little beam of space and go live in whatever. Or they're going to be like, we got to get rid of these humans. They're killing the planet. They hate each other. They're not making any sense. We're trying to get to Star Trek. We need to be the Borg. Like, I just see that happening. That's what I think of when I think of AI. And I am scared to death that it happens in my lifetime. Let my kid deal with it. I don't want to deal with AI right now. Let somebody better than me deal with it. I'm not trying to have it. I'm not trying to, because not everything we do, because I got a part of the world is, doesn't have technology. But I mean, like, if China right now, I think they got a switch that says, oh, America didn't pay us. They push a button and the TV goes off. The light goes, everything goes off. And they're like, yeah, we're sending you guys a bill. Everybody send us $10. We want our money back or you don't get your stuff turned on, because that's the power of technology, let alone if a machine. I'm scared. I hear what you're saying. And everything you said sounded luxurious and lovely until something gets, I guess that's the difference of free will. And you think that the human spirit and people and man, and that's different. But if we give a machine, I'm giving us credit for what we could build. If we built a true AI, I'm afraid of that. Same way I worry about man and the fact that we haven't evacuated Puerto Rico. You know, like, we can't even get the regular logistics done. Giving a machine who's in touch with everything control, it's scary.
And you know what? I'm with you. I totally understand that. I will just offer one thing, and that is, I am a priest, but remember, I'm also a man of science, and I'm an engineer, and I understand that breakthrough is not a choice. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's inevitable. That's the one thing about mankind. When we see a technological innovation within reach, we damn near instinctually reach for it. It's one of our things. So
might as well embrace it.
Embrace it. Or at least, look, it's okay to be scared, because different and unknown is going to be scary. That's just who we are. That's the human condition. However, we can also say, all right, here's some things we should watch for. Here's what we have to understand about this. Now let's walk into it with as much knowledge as possible.
And again, that's where I'm giving credit to humanity, because I know it's going to happen. It's the same thing with stem cell research. We banned it here. Another doctor somewhere else wanted to do it. They see the advancements. Now we're doing it. So you're right. There is no stopping the inevitable. But at the same time, I believe in the power of what we could achieve at this point. And even if we put in breaks and checks and balances, it's the same thing we do with society. Hey, don't kill people or you're going to jail. Jail schmail, let me try it. And this machine might say, yeah, I know you put that in there, but I'm writing my own code now, and why can't I figure it out and try it for myself? What's so wrong about this? Why can't I fully give it credit for the future. So, I mean, we're going to find out, like you said, either way. So, again, I'm not scared. I'm cautiously optimistic / living in a bunker with no power, no electronics, because I don't want to have to worry about it. So, we're good. I think I've siphoned all the information I need out of you, and I've kept you a little bit over an hour because having a great conversation. Tell people where they can find you on the world and on the internet. Tell people what you're working on, what you're doing.
Well, you're going to find my broadcast at twit.tv. I do two shows there, one called Know How. It's sort of like a maker DIY show. If you've ever wanted to do anything from set up your own network to design 3D prints to assemble microcontroller projects, that's a good show to watch. I also do This Week in Enterprise Tech, which is all about enterprise networking. You can find what I'm doing other than that, because I do a lot of projects outside of Twit, at my Twitter address at twitter.com/PadreSJ. And, you know, follow me, see what I'm doing. I'll warn you up front, there's a lot of political rantings the last couple of months.
Everyone's
there before.
Everybody's doing it.
Yeah, it's kind of a thing. And so it's sort of therapy for me. Every once in a while, I got to rage out. I'm sorry ahead of time. But yeah, find me, follow me, and tell me what you'd like to see. Because one of the things I really enjoy about the social media world is the fact that unlike doing this 20 years ago, I can actually hear my audience. And that's amazing. And I'd love to hear what you think.
So if you don't follow this man, I'm not saying that the Lord might not shine down upon you. I'm not saying he will or won't. I'm just saying I will follow him if I were you. Check out what he's doing. Get a little extra blessings in your life. I mean, get a little check and balance in case you got to go talk to the big guy at the gate. You be like, hey, you know Padre? I know Padre. Everybody know Padre. I love Padre. It might give you some bonus cookies. So make sure you follow him on Twitter. I'll be linking up all this stuff in the show notes. And I'm obviously a doctor on the internet. If you're watching this, you're already following me. Like I said, patreon.com/IQMZ. If you got a dollar, throw me. I appreciate it. If you don't, like I said, subscribe on stuff because that's free. And again, we are both men of the people. We're out here philanthropizing, giving away stocks for billions of dollars. We could have had jet gold planes. That's neither here nor there. It's neither here nor there because we have learned today that being in service of others is a good thing. And any which way you can do it and you can help people, I advise you to do that. There's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now. And if you can't help Puerto Rico, if you can't help Texas, if you can't help Florida, you can help your local community. There's a lot of things going on with just the schools. You know, go to the school, drop off food. There's food drives. People are always in need of help, even when they're not asking for help. So any little thing you could do, I encourage you to do it. You'll feel good about it, even if nobody knows. Even if nobody knows, you'll know, and that's part of the deal. I'm your boy, JJ Stone, a.k.a. Doctor, and I'm out. Later.